When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to this week's episode of The Neuro Show. In today's episode, Trek was dead, or at least that's what we thought 12 months ago. Is it still the case?
Have proprietary handlebars ruined the purpose of a bike fit?
We revisit Fondo etiquette. When is a race not really a race?
And how often do you wash your helmet sweat pads?
The big issues. All right, let's get into it.
Nothing like a race weekend to get some... get some juices flowing, and geez, there was some stuff that happened. So Fondo was on the Sunday. There was a crit on the Saturday. Second lap, I rode my foot into one of the barriers on the exit of a corner because I'm a hubbard and snapped my Favero Asioma pedal body in half. So I got a 3.5 minutes of racing done on the Saturday, and that was great. And then I'm left there with half a pedal having to enter a start the Grand Fondo on Sunday, and it was panic stations for a little while. There was options. Now, what I ended up doing was just buying an entire another set of Favero Asiomas from the expo. Thanks, Shane, who was selling a set. So bought them and just did a straight swap, so didn't have to worry about it. But then you kind of left there going, well, what are my options? Do I borrow someone's Shimano pedals and cleats and swap them over?
This shocked me, Jesse. So just to fill people in, Jesse was offered at the time a replacement set of Shimano. So he's the Asiomas are look based. A replacement set of Shimano pedals with Shimano cleats. We're literally like minutes after this happened. He's thinking, shit, what am I going to do tomorrow? He's offered these. And he stands in front of the person, Matt, and says, no, I will not do that. I do not want to do that. And out of his mouth says, I'll just drive tomorrow. Not gonna do the ride. So, yeah, I mean, which totally shocked me. It did actually shock me. He's like, you would not be willing to just run a different pedal cleat system for 4 hours the following day to get through that event.
No.
Okay.
No.
Wow.
There is no way I'm spending my night changing cleats over to ride a Fondo the next day. I would call it quits. That's me. By the way, can I just say, I had faith. I had that God would provide, which God did provide, said replacement set of Asiomas. So thank the Lord I did not give out and go the pedals cleat swap, because otherwise I would have been running with my feet in an awkward position. I'd have a knee injury, Chris. I'd probably be at the physio right now with a busted knee if I'd done that.
What if you run flat pedals? Just flats for the next day?
No.
No?
No, wouldn't. Well, no way. No.
Borrowed someone else's shoes.
Would I borrow someone else's shoes? Would I borrow someone else's shoes?
I can keep hitting you with these. I think I would pretty much do anything to ride the next day.
You break a boa.
Hmm.
You got to borrow someone's shoes. And are they the same size as yours?
Slightly. There's one size difference.
One size too big or small?
Ooh, good question. Big.
One size too big of someone else's shoes? No. The thing, but that's just because, yeah. If it was.
What is going to happen to you? I do not understand this. Like, so, okay, let's say you've crashed. Okay, your bike's snapped. You're down there. Matt comes over. He's like, oh, I've actually got a 56. Here it is. Oh, you can take your pedals off it. Would you ride that? Different bike the next day, but it's a size too big for you. It's a size too big. Different saddle. No power meter.
Oh, no power meter. Okay, maybe. I don't know. I The thing is, yeah. it's more about the...
It, what is it
but
about?
That's just this event in particular. If it was some other... If I was on a team and this was a stage of an NRS race, different story.
Really? This is fascinating. Oh, we're diving deep here. I don't... What? Okay, what is it about this event then? Because you said it yourself. It's a fondo. But you would be willing to do it. You're more willing to do it. Say if you were up at Sunshine Coast racing that, you would have been more willing to just toughen up and do that the next day rather than at the Barrel Fondo.
Chris, I don't think you quite have appreciation for how long I've been racing for and my care factor right now, which is I would have been more than happy. Pedals buggered. I'm just going to go to the side and I'll film some stuff.
So it's more of a pure lack of caring.
Yeah,
it's
pretty much.
Okay, rather. Okay, so it's not. That's interesting. So I was going down the wrong route. I thought it was performance based.
No.
Okay.
Even after I pulled out two laps in of the crit, it's kind of sad. My care factor was zero. Me a few years ago would have been like actually
full sookie.
Yeah, full sook, pissed off. Mm. But here's the thing, like. Once I'm actually there and the race is on or the event is on, you know, it's a different story.
Right.
But I'm quite, you know. All right, you did Grafton to Inverell this year, which you trained for. It was your target event. You rock up. Your gears are flat.
Mm-hmm.
You're stuck in a single speed. Do you do it? You're in the big ring and the middle of the cassette. Do you do it?
No, I'm sooking. Yeah, this is interesting. You've kind of called my bluff on this.
Okay.
I thought I was this guy who was just going to, yeah. Okay, no. 100% no. Not doing that.
Last night, you go to Tuesday Heffron. Your gears run out when you get there. You're stuck in the big ring, third from the bottom of the cassette. Do you still race?
It's happened to me. Yes, I've done it. Yeah.
Okay.
It was horrible. Yes, I tried. Yes.
You did that.
I did that. Yep.
Okay. You rock up to Tuesday Heffron last night. You have crashed on the way there and torn the side of your skin suit open.
I'm out. I'm home. Don't even turn up.
Do you? And someone offers you their kit to race.
Ugh.
But it's from their car and they haven't ridden in it yet. They've just come back from the laundry. No?
You're overestimating my care factor for a Tuesday night Efron.
What if it's Grafton?
Yes, I'll do that. Yes, I'll
okay.
do that.
What if the kit's not clean and they did their openers the day before in it?
Oh, Jesus.
And it's morning of the race.
Ooh. Ooh. So I'm in their chamois.
You're in their chamois and they rode in it yesterday. And it's your target A event. And it's too small, so it's really tight. It's like way up the thigh. You just rip in, you just get it on and rip in.
I think I do.
Come on.
Yeah.
Toughen up.
I think I do.
Yep.
Yeah, that's okay.
Good.
Fair enough.
I'm proud of you, Chris.
Thank you.
It's great.
Yeah. What about your 10, 15 minutes into a 4-hour Fondo event like that? Your saddle drops like 5 centimeters.
Oh.
You have no multi-tool.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't happen with an integrated seat post.
Doesn't happen with an integrated, but okay. Or your saddle, let's say your saddle tilt, just go oof, to down.
Yep.
Do you pull over, sook it out, try and get home or ride on?
If I've already started, it's a ride on. Definitely. Definitely it's a ride on.
Starts dropping until some an hour or two in, you're just out of the saddle the whole way. I think it's a good story.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. See, that's exactly right. You kind of got a story to tell.
Mm.
That'd be cool. Actually, that'd be fun if it happened.
Yeah.
Yep. I'd go for that.
My only slight experience of this was that Three Peaks one where I had the pedal came ripped off at the bottom of the descent. So that's Three Peaks is a 230K Fondo here in Australia, and 30Ks in, pedal came off, snapped off. So all of the sort of front wave, et cetera, go away. I'm 15, 20, 30, 40 minutes on the side of the road and someone is like, oh, I've actually got a spare pedal. Do you want to me to put it on? And I just went, no, going home. Yeah. So maybe Em will talk. Ultimately, I just would turn around and not do it. So we had an argument last week. Well, I'm not sure it was an argument, but a discussion last week about aero endurance bikes and how I thought that was the potential savior of the industry. So not overstate the fact. And it was the talk of the town in Barrel, Jesse. I had so many people coming up saying, look, you know, loved the debate, et cetera, et cetera. What are your thoughts on this bike? Is that an aero endurance bike? All this kind of stuff. And I've been spending a little bit of time thinking about it, and I'm not going to walk this back.
Oh, okay. I'm liking where this is going.
But so the reality of what I was saying, I think, is probably more of a stitch up than I had first taken into consideration. So let's just start with the pure practicality of what I'm suggesting, okay? Which is, I think you phrased it as pro. What did you phrase it as?
Proing a Hubbard bike.
Yeah. Right. So the reality of proing a Hubbard bike is, well, it's expensive because, okay, obviously you got the expense of buying the bike, the Hubbard bike, in the first place. But then you're changing out. Well, firstly, you're going to change out the bar stem situation. And in days gone by, yeah, that was a pretty easy operation. No. So currently, with obviously everything integrated, you're going to, well, first you got to buy the new setup. So I went for that EXS, I think it's the Aeronova ones, which is like $600, I think, somewhere in that regards. And that's pretty standard-ish. You can kind of get your fast sports ones.
Yeah, that's not full AliExpress.
No.
But it's not quite a $1,200 pro vibe one. Yeah.
True. But you're also, you're kind of a bit limited in terms of what you're able to get in this space because all the main brands kind of lock you down into. So if you're, for example, getting an S5 or something, you probably can't get a Aeronova solution for that. So you're kind of limited. That I will say about the EXS stuff, they do offer the compact and standard drop, which is pretty unusual for a lot of the proprietary ones to give you those options. So that was one thing. But okay, so you got that purchase. Then there's always more. So you got the, I think they call them, I should know this, but like caps, the steerer caps that go underneath the bike and the bar bit.
Sort of the dust cover
bit. Dust covery bit. And that's a thing, right? So some things work. So with the Chapter 2, the EXS one didn't work.
So they all have, what are you saying here? Because they have different recesses into the head tube. And different caps fit now. You can't just run your round one.
Correct. An aero, you can't just plop anything on there. It's a different setup up there. And also, there's a look thing here. I mean, maybe all of this is looks because I'm trying to pro my Hubbard bike. I want it to look flush and neat and perfect. And if I used the Chapter 2 cap, it wasn't going to be as neat and solid as the deader ones. So you've got that. When I say I did this, do you think I did this, Jesse? No, of course not. So what did I do? Went to a bike shop. Now, this is like a day's labor, pretty much. All right. So thank you, Edward.
By the way, a workshop hour in Australia could be $100 to $125 an hour in labor cost at a local shop. So that's what you and you're not doing a. I don't think no one's doing a no one at least is charging for a full handlebar swap, new cable rebleed in an hour.
No,
so you're at least 200 Australian for a handlebar swap.
And there's the timing issue of it. So I know like Edwin was like, oh, there's an 8-day lead time to even get in to do this. Apologies to all of Edwin's customers, I snuck in, but yeah, like so there's all that kind of timing aspect to it. So, all right, then you're assuming you've got that on there, bar tape, computer mounts, all that kind of stuff. And at this point, you're potentially then looking at a bike fit maybe because you've just gone and put a whole different sort of front end on your bike. So maybe you've just gone and added a bike fit to the whole top
end. You'd like to think you're pretty confident in what you're putting on before you're sending it into the
shop. There's another great point. Like you've got to be confident going in. It's like we had this chat over the weekend, you're like, geez, this looks like 2020 again, Chris. You're throwing a 130mm stem on there.
Euro Chris. Over the back of the bottom bracket and nice and stretched out.
And back in 2020, what did I do? I just bought a 130mm stem, put it on myself and went for a ride with it. And then was like, actually, I don't like this. Took it off and sold it and that was it. Job done. Now it's like we're talking about a 3-week operation, a $1,000 operation to test whether this new handlebar system
works.
Seriously,
I don't know what the intent of this topic was. If it was to put me off getting a new bike, congratulations, you're successful. This sounds like a headache, and that's assuming you... The Chapter 2 is pretty good because you could run those bars. So you're kind of lucky. If you're on a Canyon Air Road, you have to buy the Canyon Air Road bars, which seem to be on back order for most of the sizes you'd want anyway. So you're even more screwed. So, yeah, not to like, back in my day it was so easy, but geez, it was.
The reason I kind of brought it up is, I got a lot of comments and questions about like, I'm considering doing this. Oh, that's a great idea. Oh, yeah, I'm going to go down this route. Just think about a little bit of that. The other thing with this is, am I potentially overreacting to some of these millimeter differences? So they kind of sound big. All right, let's say the Defy versus the Madone. So this is the current Defy versus the SLR Madone. The reach of the Defy is 6 mils shorter. That's not dramatic. But the big difference is the stack, okay? So the stack height is 17 mils higher on the Defy, which does sound pretty big and is kind of big. But if we're just talking about aesthetics here, it's not as dramatic as it used to be because it's not like you're throwing all these spacers underneath a stem and it kind of looks all, hubbardry. It's that integrated thing where it comes with the built-in bits and pieces and it kind of flows together and it doesn't look quite as bad as it used to. The S5 is another kind of interesting category because some of the guys riding them in barrel, who I would potentially say are kind of in that aero endurance mold, ride them, race them a little bit, say, it's a little bit heavy on climbs. But they never complain about the ride quality of it. They never complain about being battered up on it, like they're out of position on it. So I don't know. This is maybe me walking that back. Maybe I'm not handing out enough credibility to people.
You know why they never talk about their position?
No.
Have you tried to get a stem for a Cervelo S5?
Mm.
It's gone so far into the untouchable territory that there's no point even thinking about, it might be more comfortable with a bit of a shorter stem. You don't even go there anymore because for all the reasons you just explained, plus even if you wanted getting the stock of the stem you're after in the one-piece handlebar, no thanks. So I think you're seeing people tinker with their position less or just avoid it. It's just full deterrent, what's the word?
Not denial.
Yeah, denial. It's denial, yeah? So there's bike fit denial because the integrated bikes are so hard to adjust your position anyway, you just don't even really think about it. D, for example, imagine if he wanted to shorten up his stem a little bit. Oh, okay. Well, I got to go to Cervelo distributor in Australia, see if they've got my stem in stock, which I can almost guarantee they won't. So then you got to order it. Then it's on back order. Then what? You're just in waiting indefinitely for the new stem to arrive? And then you got to spend probably $300 to $400 at your shop to get them to change it over. To then maybe you don't even really like it because there was no really any way to test it out unless you're getting a retool fit where they have the bike in there where they can simulate the position. You can see the rabbit hole you start to go down. Mm. So I reckon there's a lot of people denial land.
Which kind of maybe is one of the reasons why some of the people that we were talking about who want to move on from something like an S5, the actual reason is, well, I kind of just want to change my position a little bit and I just can't be bothered getting a new stem.
100%. Yeah. Honestly. I mean, what a bike fit is. I haven't had a bike fit for a while. Actually, no, I had a bike fit with Tom about 6 months ago, but I'm still on an old bike, so it's not really an issue if he wants to make any changes. But if you go to a bike fit now with a S5, for example, what can they really change? Your saddle height and the fore aft, and they can put a shim under your cleats. Everything else, change your cranks, that requires new cranks, and they can move your levers in and out and up and down. You can't really adjust anything else. Stack height, potentially, they can maybe fiddle with if it's got decent breakaway spaces. I mean, you're pretty limited. So, yeah. Bike fit denial from for an integrated bike. I mean, what do you feel? I guess that's kind of livable because that your chapter two isn't fully integrated. So it's not disastrous, although you have cut the steerer.
Yes. Yeah. And that did come with its own proprietary bar and stem which I didn't like, basically.
But you got a bike fit on the Nero bike.
Yes.
Which you have to run the integrated Nero handlebar. When you got a bike fit on that, what was the chat? Was it kind of like, well, you're close, but there's not really anything we can do anyway, so don't worry about it?
So he actually made an interesting point. It was like what was the phrase that he used? It was like, if he makes, there's nowhere to go to start with. Like that's the absolute, and I was lucky with the Nero suppliers of the Nero bike that I pre-warned them and asked for a different, because that my bike would have come with a 90 mil stem and a 90 mil stem with the movable bars. Yes. I got the 110 with the movable bars. Now, I then had to sell back I think
that was special treatment.
Special treatment.
That wasn't your regular Nero bike owner.
You can do that, but it is a stitch up.
Not globally.
Okay.
There was a Reddit thread about this, with the Nero bike owners, and they're having to swap with mates to try and do it. I think. Maybe that was an Australian privilege.
Yeah, maybe shouldn't have even said that in the first place. I'm not sure. Okay. but it wasn't a Chris Miller thing. Okay. Can I just point that out? They had no idea. So what Tom said, it was like, it was this phrase like, with all the integrated stuff, especially at the front end, yes, you're right. No one's changing up. Yeah, like, yes, you're dead side. So what he prioritizes is making sure the contact points are as comfortable as possible. So he'll like it's little things like the shapes of the hoods, the level of the saddle, the leveling of the hoods, all that kind of stuff to make sure that's as good as it can be given the circumstances that you're in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
But ultimately, yeah, you're not. You know, that said, like I've been doing bike fits for a good while. I've never done a bike fit and had a stem change or a handlebar change. Yeah, I don't know. So not fully walking it back, but partially, potentially. Yep. Yeah. You've gone and ruined another fondo for everyone, Jesse.
You are welcome. Yeah. My pleasure.
I realize like having this chat, it's like so irrelevant to a lot of people doing it, but I still think there's some value here.
Yeah.
There's some value.
Well, I think we're going to go into some etiquette chat. So I think this is everyone should be aware of the fondo etiquette.
We say the word fondo, but the problem here is just how like specific this is because the definition of that word, whatever, we've sort of briefly tried to talk about this in the past, but this one was like 140Ks, but you got mixed abilities doing mixed distance events on the same course at the same time. Now, it stipulates in the actual like sign-in on this that this is not a race.
Yep.
All right? However, there is a timed – the whole thing is timed. So you have a start and a finish, not timed segments, which I know a lot of people have mentioned to us in the past that some events do. They just do like little chunks. But this is like the start, the end – which is great, but they also then rank you. So you can log on to a results page and see who's number one, number two, and it's based on when you crossed this sort of electronic timing chip. So how does this play out then? So you've got a race that's not a race on terrain that is kind of good for racing on. Like how do we do this?
Well, it's classic Fondo rules. As soon as you hit the climb, everything's fair game. The fact that it's not a race means you can't sneak attack. To me, the etiquette is whatever you're doing has to be visible or fair game. So there's no going to the back and sending flyers. It's sort of strongest guy wins rules. To me, that's what makes it a fondo and not a race. And that's why I was confused when you were saying the group you're in Went up the final KOM, which was about 15 minutes from the finish, sort of downhill and then flat roll into the finish. And you guys got over the final KOM and blokes are sending attacks from the back. Absolute blinders. I thought that was quite confusing because to me that was black and white breaking of the Fondo etiquette.
See, I didn't have an issue with it. I had no issue because part of this is just a frustration, I think, that there's not a lot of this kind of racing around. But so, yeah, the way that kind of played out is this was sort of semi-non-cohesive group that's sort of riding. And unfortunately, like, it was a particularly unselective course apart from the bit where you blew us to shreds and rode away from everyone. Apart from that, if you get a group, you're pretty much going with the group if you stay in the Fondo etiquette, which is not attacking, dropping wheels, all that kind of stuff. And we did. We went over that last KOM. You know, guys then got back on, and guys who had maybe been a little bit tailed got back on, and then they've – and this is where it gets awkward because they were – see, I totally see their mindset.
You're rolling together, 100%. It's a Fondo. And by the way, the road on the run-in was through the back side of the suburb, so it's full suburban, manicured lawns, through roundabouts. The marshals on the course, these lovely volunteers are there, you know, waving and shouting and screaming, and you blokes are sending attacks and cutting up inside or on the roundabouts. It's just
I'd like to point out I was just following, but okay, devil's advocate. Mm-hmm. So one of the guys who was sending attacks
yep.
was dropped on the last climb
mm-hmm.
and he got back on. So why does he then have to just sit on and be like, well, great. So when I get to the next climb or bump, they're just going to ramp it up that again and I'm just going to be dropped
chasing back on.
Yeah.
Because it's a Grand Fondo, see, not a road race.
Yeah, I mean, but it's these are the things. So I kind of
– it's because it's a race to the bottom if you start doing that. Because then what starts happening is we all roll out at the start if this is the new etiquette. And then suddenly blokes are, well, I'm going to get dropped up the first climb anyway. So then they're sending attacks at the start. And then suddenly you don't have a Grand Fondo. You've got a fully fledged all-out war, like a state road race.
Yeah.
So I think I was very surprised when I heard you say that that was happening at the end because that's –
let the kids play. Let the kids play.
Right. And this is – might I add, from you, who had a bit of a dig at me for doing an absolute fair game rip up the first climb.
Well, that was just jealousy, Jesse. Yeah. Yeah. In hindsight, what you did was perfectly acceptable behaviour. It did ruin the dynamic of the whole day because what ends up happening is so the leader, well, it was meant to be the lead group, the leader gets a car out in front, which basically kind of makes it safer for that front bunch to go through, which was just keeping you safe. Whereas
– oh, I was with Brad, another with guy. Brad. It wasn't just me. It
whereas
was another
the 20 of us behind you didn't have anything, but that was whatever. Yeah, I mean, you going by your rules, you've absolutely – and to be fair, going by the rules which I've lived and died by for the majority of my Fondo existence. All right, well – okay then.
Because that's the beauty of the Grand Fondo is that if you can just keep making the selections, you get the fair result at the end of the day. You don't want it being a road race where you're in there and someone else is attacking and you're going, oh, they're getting a massive advantage on me. Oh, now I'm losing one more position, two more positions, three more positions in the results sheet because guys have just attacked. That's the bit that people don't like about road racing. And they actually screwed themselves up a little bit because on the results sheet via the timing, depending on where you were in the group when you rolled out and crossed the timing mat, there were guys getting 1 or 2 seconds extra for free in the results sheet. So your group that was actually third place to about 10th was separated by a few seconds based on where the guys crossed the timing mat. And I'm going to say there were some guys claiming fourths and fifths, which I thought was also against Fondo etiquette because if you roll in with a group, it's a bunch.
So what's the acceptable Strava title if you have rolled into the finish line with the Fondo group?
couple of options. You either go main group. I think for your group, from the Highlanders that set out, the Highlanders is the elite group that goes up first at the Barrel Classic. Main group, finish, perfectly acceptable. I'm also going to say equal third.
Ooh.
Because if everyone that was in your group just says equal third, then that's fair game. Same time. Or same time as third, I think. But if you got fourth in that group just because you happened to cross the timing mat and you're claiming top fives when you finished in the same group as a guy that got 10th, sneaky bugger. That's sneaky. That's pulling the wool over. The people, the Strava followers need the truth. No mind games.
How
please.
About first group?
No. But no.
Might have to edit that.
No. First group. Okay. Technically, you were in the first group that finished.
First group.
But first group, by regular definitions, means the first of the first group that crossed.
Could you utilize the description box to fully articulate the situation?
I think you can claim so first group go with if you give credit to the two guys that broke away.
Yep. I think that's what I did. I think I did Barrel Classic, first group, finish, and then in the description, 10 minutes behind Jesse and Brad. It was something along those lines. Okay.
People are going to think that people are going to think that this is the most elitist chat and this is everything that's wrong with road riders. But if you go to an event, it's not nice if for you who got, I think, ninth or eighth in that group, you know, you go on Strive.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
You're pretty proud of your effort, and there's blokes that you finish next to, they're claiming thirds and fourths. I think we all need to be honest. No tricking people, please. They could also do that on the timing results. They should say 1, 2, and then 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, then 12.
That's the easy fix. Like that, and I actually do, I'm kind of taking the opposite side here for a bit of chat, but yeah, I mean, I don't like bombing it into Barrel and running like the wrong side of traffic islands with volunteers who have been told like, you know, what to do when riders come, like not guys railing around roundabouts trying to drop their group.
Blokes on air roads with 60 mil L's just sending it like it's
totally not kosher. And the where the actual finish mat was there, couple of years ago, they had the finish time was actually out of Barrel. So you cross that finish line and then the last 5Ks was proper processionary, you know, waving to the fans.
That's
and the locals.
A good point. I would love to see them move the timing mat to the top of the final climb, and then it's just a procession through town. You wave to the people, wave to all the bystanders, and roll it in. High fives, chat with the blokes. I think it'd be a bit nicer. And it might seem pedantic going through the results, but in this Gran Fondo day and age, that's not being pedantic, because if you make in some of the Gran Fondos, if you're top 30%, your selections into Gran Fondo events. So there's guys that are really going through the results. Did I get 40th or 45th? Because that makes a difference in this day and age. So it might seem pedantic to those that do gravel and drink craft beers, but it's actually pretty serious if you're in the Gran Fondo scene. Your exact result's important.
Especially now, like they've legitimately tried to create a Gran Fondo World Championships. Mm-hmm. Like that's qualification type stuff. So you just need to, I don't know, organise that a little bit better. So almost 12 months ago, Jesse, we declared on this prestigious show that Trek is dead. Do we still think that? Do we still? Well, actually, no. Let's start with this. So, when we said that 12 months ago, what were we actually saying? Like, what was it? What was our rationale for believing at the time Trek was dead?
The rationale was we're not seeing them on the road. We're not seeing them much in social media, and the pro team does very little to promote the Trek bikes.
Yeah,
that was what.
And I think ultimately it was kind of boring, right? So. Yeah, there was the big one for me was like it felt like Trek was putting all this money into like its pro team and getting no reward for it being a sort of also ran irrelevant team, which kind of led us down the track of thinking that it was dead and didn't see it on the road. Right, 12 months on. Okay, the pro team stuff, is that, what do you think? Is that improved?
Not really.
Disagree.
Okay.
No, I think it's, I mean, for starters, they've clearly got to be spending less money on it because they're now not the sole naming rights sponsor anymore. They've managed to increase the viewer just for a kit change. It kind of looks better on the road. I'll give them that. They also did the whole special colorways on the bikes.
Yes, that was successful.
You got to say like that.
Oil slick Madone
yeah, that was sick. The tour sort of cut through a little bit social media side of it.
You know what? I think they've accidentally had a success with the Madone. Not because of anything they've actively done, just by the look of the bike. Because the Madone came out and it was cool aero bike in a sea of other aero bikes. And now that it looks like a lot of the other brands, at least in the last 3 or 4 months, are releasing their do-it-all road or their, and by that I mean their aero climbing crossover bikes. Lots of gravel bike releases. When you're looking in the road space now, the Madone looks futuristic, whereas it was getting crowded out a little bit when it was first released because that's when all the aero bikes were coming out then. And now the Trek Madone's hot compared to an SL8 in terms of just looks when you see it on Instagram scrolling through. Or compared to, I'm going to say, even a Canyon Aero is starting to look pretty dated. So just by virtue of the fact that there's not that many cool aero-looking bikes coming out in the last 3 or 4 months, Trek stock has risen in my small little brain. That's what I think. By accident.
Yeah. By good luck and not by design. I kind of agree with you. And it actually annoys me that it has cut through as well as it has. Because it's still, to me, okay, Trek to me still does things like an old school boring way. And I don't appreciate that in terms of just in terms of the way they promote their bikes and that sort of stuff. There's good parts to that. So they, from what I understand, like they leave a lot to their dealers. Like, so if you have a good local dealer, so we have like, who are they? Park Bikes in Nash. They do a really good job. They integrate into the club out there really well. And every time we call out Trek, you always see people coming back and saying, no, they like run a really good ride here in this local area and that kind of stuff. But it's not Trek doing that, I might point out. It's the local dealer who's like engaged that. And that's kind of an old school way, but it's also really, really effective, right? But they do that also in their big branding stuff. So for example, like I saw there the other day that they've a bicycle magazine here in Australia is going to do a review on the Trek Madone, all right? Now, what, like, so the reason I kind of say that is, like, there's no really good Madone review on YouTube. I had a look before we sort of came on here. There's none. There's lots of, like, usery ones of just, like, Joe Bloggs buys a Madone and talks about it for 15 minutes on the YouTube channel. Awesome, cool, great. But there's no, okay, Dave Arthur sort of in a wind tunnel sort of thing, but that wasn't really a review. You know, why hasn't Cam Nichols been, okay, Why wasn't Cam Nicholls given that Trek Madone to do a review instead of said random bike magazine that's going to go out to 5,000 people in Australia next month? I don't understand stuff like that. So that frustrates me. And yeah, you know, you look at some of their engagement in stuff like their Instagram page, which has got like almost 100,000 followers, and their photos get 200 likes.
Yep. So you're kind of making the case that if you compared the Factor Ostro to the Trek, in the online space that we're in, the Factor wins every day of the week.
100%.
Every day of the week.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why we were saying a year ago, the pro team isn't moving the needle that much for the Trek Madone, so it's a bit of a flop. But for fast forward a year, and just by sheer frothiness of the actual look of the bike, it beats the Factor now because the Factor looks so dated, the Ostro. That's kind of my take on it. And that's and I've seen the Treks in person and they do look really nice. So that's yeah. Funny how that's happened. When's the last time they updated the Imonda?
Well, that's overdue.
It feels like it was a while ago, doesn't it?
Yep.
Because I was just about to give them credit for still keeping the aero and climbing bike lines separate, because I'm of the opinion that they should be separate because there's different needs. People should be able to choose. But the Imonda, sheesh, it's getting old, isn't
it? So the Imonda and the R5 are both due upgrades next year. But having said that, for me, that doesn't excite me a great deal, because I could pretty much guess what it's going to look like.
Yeah. If you're going to buy a climbing bike right now, what's the top of your froth climbing bike list?
R5.
Still, even though it hasn't been updated.
It's the freaking Jumbo Visma thing, isn't it?
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
There's no incorrect answers. Other. Personal.
That's the problem. Like, climbing bike.
So you're going to go do Taiwan KOM Challenge. You get free reign to pick any climbing bike. You pick an R5 still.
If I get free reign, I would choose a Time Alpe d'Huez. There's a random one for you.
All right.
Yeah. Time Alpe d'Huez. Right.
But that's more of a brain pick, not a heart
that's
pick.
It's an industry pick. Yeah.
Okay.
Look Aeroblade be in there, but that's a sort of aero bike as well. I would never choose an SL8, but that's just me.
Yeah, well, it's not typically a climbing bike.
What would you choose?
I'm going through what are the hot climbing bikes right now. The new Factor Ostro O2 Fam with the integrated seat mast.
Canyon Ultimate.
So the Canyons, they're amazing value and I think they're good bikes, but they're boring. They look kind of crap.
I heard someone say, this might have been on Oomph. That Canyon is the Westerner's giant. It's like what the value performance bike, the mainstream value performance bike.
But it is giant. Yeah. But we still have giant. It's kind of the same.
But it's not viewed as performancey as he was suggesting giant is in Asia.
Oh, okay.
Mm. That was the guy on the TCR who had the three sizes. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. No, so Canyon Ultimate, nah. Or the, Imonda, no, when's the last time I updated the thing? It's so old. Potentially the Specialisma, but that's only because it was released feels like only a month ago. So that'll fade if it doesn't really get out on the road anywhere. I have to give it to Factor. I really can't think of any recent climbing bike updates that stick in my brain.
Do you think, so this is slightly off topic, but do you think like something like, well, not Trek's not a great example, but because we're talking about Trek, would they think that us talking about them now is bad or good? So, okay, obviously we talked about Argon last week, Argon 18, and Argon reached out and said, oh, you know, thanks for talking about us. You got any more questions, email here, et cetera, which was kind of cool. We thought, oh, Argon actually watching what we're saying. But the theme I thought of them getting in contact was like, oh, we just correct some mistakes you made there, guys. Like, you know, let's just.
Probably.
Yeah, it was that kind of thing. Which was funny because when I remember like editing it and thinking about putting it live, I was like, oh, we've basically just done an ad for Argon 18. Like gave them like 15 minutes. We were talking about the brand. I don't know. I just kind of wonder, like, do you think they, I don't know, they're like, oh, shit, they're talking about us.
I thought that they're, I thought what they said was pretty cool. Like that's as good as you're going to get from a brand is, hey, at least we've watched your thing. You don't see Specialized or Giant reaching out saying, hey, we watched your chat about us. I thought it was pretty cool.
But do you think, but my point is, do you think they thought what we said was negative and ultimately bad for them? Or do you think they were like, oh, Chris and Jesse are talking about us. That's cool. Like that'll be good.
I honestly don't know.
Yeah, okay.
I thought we were, unless my memory's gone broken, I didn't really have anything bad to say. I mean, the only potentially negative thing I had to say was that I said gravel bikes are easy to market because they're not performance-based. That was pretty much the only.
But when we talked about it, we said we hadn't seen them. We'd said like a little bit how we, you know, the Trek thing. We're like, we haven't seen these. What's going on, guys? And so that's when we kind of asked, because ultimately, like, that's the questions people are asking in bunches and stuff. Like, people are saying that. Geez, I haven't seen Argon for ages. So, yeah, I don't know. I just sort of thought that was crossed my mind. Sorry. All right, 12 months on. Trek is it's off life support, I think, and kicking.
Remember the night before Barrel, you were going through your nutrition and you were going through the Morton gels and you said, oh, these are 40 grams each, 40 grams each. And I'm looking at it. I'm like, Chris, they're 25 grams per serve.
Yeah.
The 40 grams is the total volume of the gel. And they don't really make that clear on the front of the Morton gel. It says 40 grams. So you just assume it's 40 grams of carbs. I, at a rider I coach, did the exact same thing that you did.
It's so misleading.
And he's like, oh, yeah. I'm half my fueling plan because the gels are about half what I thought they were.
Yep.
Total stitch up.
Yep. No, I was quite surprised by that. The other thing I noticed, like you were running, so you ran the SIS Beta Fuel, what was it called?
Nootropics.
I took a photo of the two of them next to each other. Like we've mentioned this before, but geez, they've done that branding so well. Like your gel looks like it was created in this lab by sports. Like it was just absolute perfectly made for performance. I had the other caffeine one, the SIS like double espresso. It basically looks like a confectionery you get at a like gas station compared to your like, I'm serious.
Yes.
Christ, they've done that well.
Yeah.
Like I was immediately jealous. I'm like, oh man, I've lost performance here just because my packaging doesn't look as cool as that. Saw a lot of canyons, I have to say. That's the most canyons I think I've seen at a mass participation event here in Australia, easily. I don't know whether suddenly there's been a drop of them or whatever happened, but can I also mention just a bit of a demographic shift?
Yeah. What are we seeing on the ground?
So definitely the COVID babies are starting to like ride. Doing these events now, doing quite well at these events now, groups of them going. And what did you call, them Mamul, what was it?
The millennial man in Lycra.
The millennial man in Lycra, the group of those guys and girls, like it's those groups coming to events now rather than the fully fledged mammal. Like the mammal seems to be like isolated out in ones and twos, might be just coming in with one other mate, whereas the COVID mammal, there's groups coming in. It's a far more social outing. I don't know. The shift has occurred. Well, there's less Anglos going. 100%.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. Like definitely more Filipinos, specifically in the Barrel one. Filipinos, Chinese, heaps more. Mm-hmm.
So younger.
Yep.
More diverse, less of just the rusted on mammal. And if they are there, they're probably solo, potentially just one or two.
Yep.
Where have the mammals gone then? They haven't disappeared. They never stopped cycling. Are they at gravel events now?
Oh, God.
Is that where they've gone?
Well, he had 3,500 people there. So maybe they are still there as well. It's just the numbers are actually growing.
More reflective. More reflective. Because generally crit racing at the local racing, you don't see those the Filipino groups or the other.
Not yet, no.
It's not at the crits. They're not really into the crit scene. It seems more and also the young guys, you don't see the 20 to 25 corporate guys really doing crits. They don't like it. So it is cool to see that there is more diversity at the Grand Fondos, but not really carrying over into the rest of the road racing.
I don't have a take on that. That's interesting though. You're dead right. Like, it definitely felt like a different crowd to who's sort of turning up to local crit racing. But then again, I suppose the other aspect of it, like not many people from the rusted on top end of like the crit racing scene turned up to do the Fondo. So maybe we're the ones who are a bit odd doing both. I don't know.
Did Cycling Tattooist crash? Or recently?
Yeah. On driving down to Portugal, they had a horrible crash.
Car crash.
Oh, is he all right? Yes, he is okay. Shout, Tommy. I've spoken to him. He's, they're okay. They're shaken up. But, yeah, like if you saw the car or the four-wheel drive, it's like I saw the picture on his Instagram. I was like, they're dead. It's just like, yeah, holy shit.
Oh, okay, I assumed it was in the notes here. I thought you meant on his bike.
No. Car crash, yeah. So rest up, my friend. And just quickly, another random YouTube one for you. Greg McCann's got a new feed up there in Mexico, avoiding cartels. It's brilliant. Love it. He's my favorite YouTuber. Get on there, him in Victoria.
I'll have to watch.
I'm a Patreon member now.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Okay.
The supporter.
Scattergun round.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people think you're
just
elite.
Just a 50-minute club?
Yeah, 50-minute club. Actually, welcome, everyone.
Welcome.
Have a seat. Nice to have you with us. Elitist cycling is not racing anymore. It's not road. It's just commuting on your bike. Everyone's on the bike, right? Okay, here we go. Let me lay it out for you. For the Dutch listeners, they're going to think I'm mad because they're like, whoop-de-freaking-do, you commuted on your bike. But in Sydney, no one really commutes on their bike. There's I can probably think of five little stretches where you'll see bike commuters. Everywhere else, no one really. The only people you see riding are roadies going for road rides and delivery drivers. And like a meth head who's lost their license. Those three that's who ride bikes. There's not many just I'm going to the shop people, okay? So that's, if I ever feel elitist, it's commuting on my bike, rocking up to Bunnings Warehouse or Officeworks, just locking it up out the front and going straight in. It's amazing. And it's because I crashed on my Vespa scooter like 4 months ago. And now I've kind of got the ick. I don't like, it's just,
it's got the
I
hips.
Just put, yeah, not interested in riding it. And it's actually, I realized it made me lazy because if I didn't drive, I was then taking the scooter. So you kind of beat the traffic, but then it's not really exercise. And now that I've not done that, now I've gone back to the bike because now I don't want to just sit in the car, sit in traffic. So now I'm back on the bike and it's awesome.
Oh, you do like it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I rode here today, been going again, go to Bunnings to get something from the house, ride, Officeworks to get postage bags, ride. It's like it's forced me back into doing errands by bike. And not only is it just free exercise, it is the most feeling of elitism I've had in a long time, well above, you know, rocking up to a crit thinking you're all that.
Are we on the TCR Seriously. Doing this?
No, so no. I've got a flat bar commuter bike. Yeah. So, yeah, just on that. It's really been awesome to actually get back into that because I have been a bit, you just get lazy with it. You just, I'll just take the scooter. I don't have to ride. When you just do it, it's so good.
It's such a bad city for commuting around. But putting all the infrastructure aside, like it's so hilly. That's the main problem.
Yeah,
like if you're going to ride to a mate's, it's just like you turn up and you've just been doing intervals because you have. You're going up and down big hills. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not perfect for it, but still, I mean, I'm fit. Like, obviously, if I didn't train and didn't have much fitness, it'd be a lot harder. But yeah, it's been really, really cool.
Let's get him on a fixie. Go full, tight jeans, get in there. All right. My set of random one is came home from, it was the first Heffron a couple of weeks ago.
Okay, first race of the season.
First race of the season. And I flicked across on the ride home and I was like, oh, shit, big numbers, Chris.
Yes.
Big numbers. Yep. And I was like, whoa. I can't wait to upload this.
Look at the normalised.
Oh, this is going to be great. The Strava crowd are actually going to go, oh, he did more than 300 watts. It's amazing. Anyway, getting home. So I run the Garmin Varia as well. So I'm Varia'd up and I've got my gum. So I'm coming in home. And what I tend to do is I tend to stop my ride about 200 or 300 metres before I get home. So then I'll hit save as I'm riding in. Wi-Fi issues, blah, blah, blah. So anyway. Hit stop, and I don't hit save. I'm just sort of riding it in. And as I pull up on the bike, I turn off the Varia. And so anyone has Garmin Varia, it flashes up a little sort of, oh, your Garmin's been disconnected at the bottom. Now, stitch up is that the touch screen of the Garmin is not, the UI is not actually seeing the alert. It's still interacting with what's below, which is a save and a discard button.
Oh, my God.
Okay. So as the disconnect alerts come up, I've pressed to get rid of the alert, hit save. I've done a double press. So I've pressed it and I've pressed it again to because it didn't happen. There's a little bit of latency. So I've pressed it and then on the second press, my finger has pressed where discard is.
Oh, no.
Now, there was a cry heard across the inner west.
I think I heard it in Waterloo, carried across the city.
A discarded, it was, and so I've come in, I'm just, Elizabeth thought I've murdered, like something's terrible has occurred, which had happened. I was so
truly
annoyed,
terrible.
Like to the point I was properly questioning why did I even go? If it wasn't for the fact that Richard Shriver was there taking photos and I snuck into a couple of photos, there was no evidence of me attending that race.
Why is there even a delete button?
Yeah, that's
who goes for a 3-hour ride and deletes it?
That's a great point.
Why does it exist?
Mm. There should be no option for discard.
I would be nervous at the end of every single ride if I had a Garmin because I would just be, please don't press it. That's so weird.
And there was no are you sure option.
Oh. So well, it was just there discard. Isn't, because it's gone straight away.
Yeah, it's like because I would have normally expected the sort of are you sure you want to erase the memory.
Maybe like a double prompt.
Mm.
Are you really sure?
So particularly unhappy with that outcome, unfortunately. And I don't know.
You
they were good
said
numbers.
To me, you did. You were said, oh, who you reckon's roughly about my size? Maybe I can ask them for their file. That's how sad you are, Chris.
Edwin, I thought Edwin might give me his. I was
Edwin.
Like, you know, what's he?
Oh, he's
a
good
bopper,
isn't he? He's a good 20, 30 watt side. Yeah,
rolled less turns anyway. Yeah, so there was that unfortunate reality. Actually, I heard another one randomly, another Oompa one, and a guy was talking about his Shimano group set, and he's like, his favorite feature of his Shimano DI2 group set was the synchro shift.
Now, remind me of synchro shift again.
Synchro shift is that thing where it automatically shifts between the big ring and the little ring.
Oh, now, no circumstances.
I listened to a bit of Oompa in the headphones riding the bike. I legitimately almost crashed when I heard that. I don't think I've ever heard anyone, not alone use it, but suggest that it was in any way useful. But this guy was like, yeah, it's great. It just, my shifting's so smooth and I never have to think about it. It's just like, okay.
I mean, good if you're disabled and you don't have access to the front shifter.
But the whole point of having the front derailleur shifter was he had some control over that. But anyway, there you go. There is someone out there.
There is one.
There is one.
Oh.
Who loves it.
Okay.
Any other random ones for us?
Bar tape.
Mm.
How often do you replace yours?
So, okay. I have been recently running a bit of white bar tape.
Okay, pro option.
But here's the thinking, because before that I just pretty much always run black. And honestly, I would have left the thing on for years. It was disgusting. But at least with white bar tape, you're almost forced to not only clean it, but replace it when it's probably reached a stage of disrepair. Like, there were some bar tapes back in the day that have they've got variants of COVID on there that may never, ever get immunized against. So the answer to your question is now I'm looking at sort of 2 months.
Whoa. 2 months?
Yep.
Whoa.
Is that a lot or not much?
That's very off.
Yeah. It used to be almost 2 years.
If yep. I'm lucky.
Mm.
I'm trying to think of what's the equivalent in life of bar tape that I would potentially be disgusted at if I thought about it.
Like, you're putting your hands
on this thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you might relieve yourself on a ride, get back on, no issues.
On my handlebars.
No, but you'd go to the toilet on the side of the road potentially. I mean, you're not using baby wipes from my saddlebag after it, I'd imagine. So, you know, you've got that sort of circumstance happening. Yep. I don't know. I just came to a bit of a realization that, and the white helps because you kind of start looking down and go, that's brown now. You should do something about that, Chris.
How often do you replace the pads in your helmet?
I clean them. I take them off and put them in the washing machine.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, I got to lift. I'm disgusting.
Yeah, you are disgusting.
It's really filthy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It helps being not in an apartment to do that because at least, like, you can then dry it out in the sun. And, like, I often do that. I'll put the helmet in the sink and give it a detergent and then dry it out in the sun because I hate that smell. You put the helmet on and it's just like smells like, yeah.
I've never cleaned the pads in my HJC helmets. And you know how long we've had them for. What? It's got to be a year now. That's freaking, and that's actually very disgusting because at least the handlebar tape, you're not actually wearing. You're kind of resting on it and it, you know, kind of gets inadvertently clean when you clean your bike if you're not scrubbing it. Yeah, those, yeah. All right, I'm going to go home and wash my helmet pads.
Does it not stink though?
But they come, No.
Maybe I'm just smelly because that's what I find. As soon as it gets to the point where I'm putting the helmet on, it smells like I'm in a rugby dressing room. I'm just like, no, out, done, move on.
Most helmets come with a replacement set though. So you take them off and stick them in the, your wash.
Yeah, to put them in a little wash bag that goes in the wash. All good, happy days. Do you clean your shoes much?
Well, that's why I don't wear the white shoes that often. I have white shoes. I don't wear them that often.
But again, it's another advantage.
Clean my shoes.
You actually clean them.
No. The only time I really clean my shoes would be if I ride in the rain. When I get back, I'll just hose them and then just put them in the sun. I don't clean my shoes, although I do clean my actual shoes. I put them in, stick them in the washing machine.
All right, Jesse, I reckon that's us done today. Do you have any shout-outs, any mentions, kit updates or anything you want to
mention? No shout-outs, no mentioned. Kit's still in stock.
Thank you so much for watching, guys. Make sure to subscribe and to like the video. And do share it on with your mates. That really does help us out. All right, we will see you next week.
Yep.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.